The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for jumping on in. We have a lot to get to today. Always Something University has had some breaking news today. We'll get over to that at Arizona State with their football program, the Suns and Devin Booker and much more. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I've been working out today, can you tell? ASU. So let's just start there. So this morning, The Athletic Doug Haller reports that Ricky Pearsaw, the leading wide receiver on the team, and Eric Gentry, linebacker, freshman All-American, have both entered the transfer portal, both leaving ASU. And of course, we're going to get the next man up, or, well, you know, we didn't really need them here, need them there. Fandom will take over, and I'm just going to sit here and say, how much more? How much more? And this is the offseason since Ray Anderson and Michael Crow talked about Herm being the coach and, you know, all that stuff and the change in staff and trying to stay underground. And we've talked about how the transfer portal is just going to turn things upside down. The NIL over at ASU, where there's some comments that were made about the not as important as some other universities. All this stuff just adds up. And so I can't sit here today and say that I'm surprised. I'm not going to hate on kids for leaving. They have every right to leave. This is a bigger deal on the college front, where now you don't know what you're going to have in terms of a program probably until around June. And it's not just ASU, it's everybody. Because there's going to be transfer portal guys at U of A. There's going to be transfer portal guys at NAU. There's going to be transfer portal guys at the biggest of programs, the smallest of programs. There's going to be guys that are they're starters. These are two starters that said, I am out of here in April. Out of here. Why is that? Was it because there was not NIL money? Was it because they just look around and say, we're not going to win? Is it because coaches leaving? Is it because the outside influences are saying this and that? I don't know in either case, but I know all of that factors in. And when you're in a when you're in the Pac-12 South and you have Utah, a team that was in the Rose Bowl that is just rolling right now, and you have USC with Lincoln Riley coming in, and you have a pretty good UCLA team coming back, and you have an Arizona program that even though they've lost 23 of 24, they brought in a lot of very talented players, five-star wide receiver, Pac-12 freshman of the year quarterback in the portal. And you're sitting over here at Arizona State where you don't know what's going to happen still with the notice of allegations in the NCAA for one, and two, just looking at it on paper and saying, I don't think we're going to be very good or we're going to be average. And I'm going to go take my talents elsewhere. That's going to happen everywhere in college football. And it's just going to change. If you're one of those today that sits here and says, that's no big deal that Eric Gentry and Ricky Pearsaw left, then I would just say, yeah, you're a fan of ASU football no matter who's out on the field. And you're okay being 3-8. You're okay with it. You're okay going to the Sun Bowl once again and the Vegas Bowl once again. Because as we're sitting here right now, tell me you're not going to go any other bowl otherwise. I mean, it's we are just stuck here in Tempe and in Tucson in terms of being a national power. We are stuck. There's other terms I could use that are more colorful, that aren't on family shows. Like this one tries to be through the years. But this is, man. And you may think I'm laughing at this, at you know, the whole situation kind of nonchalant. No, I'm disgusted by it. I don't like seeing this. But I don't think it's just the portal and NIL. I think it's just an overall view of what's going on in Tempe that just continues. And it's very disappointing. But hey, hockey's going to start this year in the new building, and people will be excited about that. And you know, maybe basketball plays over there, and Bobby's got some recruits coming in. No, football is the lifeblood of an athletic department. So that's the breaking news today over at Arizona State. The Diamondbacks game yesterday, and I'll get to the Suns in a minute, but the Diamondbacks game yesterday where a guy parachutes out and they had to call security. This guy came close to being, I don't know, chopped down because he jumped out of a plane with a parachute on to land within the stadium and nobody knew about it. The Diamondbacks were there for the game yesterday. You can't script this stuff. And Seth Beer continues to deliver. I love what Seth Beer is all about. And I look over and see the Carson Kelly had another rough day. And they've got to get him figured out. And or there just comes a point of, okay, this is what we have. And is this the right way to go? So it was good to see that. They're home for a long homestand with the Mets and Dodgers. There'll be a lot of Mets and Dodger fans cramming into downtown Phoenix. In terms of Devin Booker, we still have all day today and we have tomorrow, all the way till tomorrow night. The key word that I've heard is likely. Likely. It's likely to be sunny today. Well, yeah, it is sunny today, but likely leaves a slight chance, itty bitty chance. Well, we said he was likely going to be out. I'm not expecting him to play the next two games, nor do I think he needs to play the next two games. The Suns just simply need to get a split down in New Orleans. If they lose the game tomorrow night, then there's already panic in the streets. Like, I don't see a way that the Suns can win a title without Devin Booker on the floor near 100%. I don't. Oh, that's being hating. No, it's being factual. So it's just, you expect Landry Shamet to step into the 25 points per game. You want to give me that Cam Johnson can go get 25, and he could. Cam Johnson could. And Shamet could go get 15, and now we're sitting there at 40. And see, Brad, we had it all figured out. Prove me wrong. I'm okay with that. I don't see it on the surface. And I also think that if you look at, like, the Lakers last year were an old, aging team. Guys that have been through it. So when Anthony Davis went down, and LeBron was trying to hang on last year when the Suns played the Lakers. That's a whole different deal versus this is a young, talented, I don't give a bleep who the Phoenix Suns are attitude and mentality. And it starts with their head coach. And they play hard. They played harder than the Suns the other night. Want to disagree? Look at the transition defense and how awful it was. Just look at it. And when you go top to bottom, the Pels are just one of these teams that you don't want to run into because they have star players that are gaining confidence. Brandon Ingram gained confidence the other night. They have a veteran guard who doesn't give a bleep, CJ McCollum. And yeah, Mikal Bridges has put a lot into him. Now Mikal Bridges needs to put something on the offensive end of the floor. I'm not saying he can't, but you're asking Mikal Bridges to have to do a little bit more offensively because Devin Booker is not on the floor. Does this make sense? Like, tell me where the points that Booker is not going to be on the floor. Where are those points coming from? And then just go through the lineup. Okay, is DeAndre Ayton clearly dominating Valanciunas? The answer is no. Can I see DeAndre Ayton getting 17 to 20? Not at this point. Does he need to? Yes. Okay, go to Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's not done much offensively the first two games. Does he need to be around 12 to 15? The answer is yes. Okay, get down to Bridges. Does Bridges need to be around 15 to 20 without Devin Booker on the floor? The answer is yes. Chris Paul. Does Chris Paul need to be around 20 to 25? That's an awful lot to ask of a 36, about to turn 37-year-old point guard. And yeah, he dominated the other night in a segment of the game. He also did it where he had a full complement of players. So if Monty goes with Shamet and he doesn't give you much, how quickly does he go to Cam Johnson? And then does that thin out your bench? Cameron Payne comes off the bench. Fan favorite. Cameron Payne's got to give you 12, 15 points a game. Where are the points coming from when Devin Booker's not on the floor? And don't give me like, well, just go Suns and everything's going to work out and next man up. We've taken this term, next man up. It's kind of like over at ASU. Well, Herm's going to say, next man up mentality. He has nothing else that he can say. And I don't know, do you have a freshman All-American linebacker hanging around? The answer is no. Next man up mentality. Ricky Pearsall, your leading receiver. Could you find someone else to step into that? Maybe. So it's really easy and cavalier and casual to just say, well, next man up mentality versus, no, you know what? 1 through 11, we've got it figured out. Injuries happen, things take place. Look what happened in Milwaukee last night. You talk about panic in the streets this morning from what I'm seeing online and reading. Chris Middleton sprains his MCL. Chris Middleton, very talented player. Olympic player right there with Devin Booker. Not the highest end, but right below him. And so Milwaukee loses Chris Middleton with a knee injury. They don't know how long he's going to be out. They're going to say next man up, or they're just going to say, no, we feel really good about this person. Okay, I don't like it when it's just, well, next man up. That's how we have to approach it. No, do you have the right guy? Did the Suns do enough at the trade deadline to address the what if something happens to Devin Booker scenario? It's a very fair question to ask. Was there a lot of angst about do they have enough behind Devin Booker? Is Shamet enough behind Devin Booker? Thought it was a pretty good pickup in the offseason, but here we are now in April. And do they have enough? We will find out. I mean, this is really where James Jones gets judged and graded in a certain respect of, was adding JaVale McGee an upgrade? Absolutely it was. It was a great move by James Jones. Was Landry Shamet enough of an upgrade? I don't know. Would Eric Gordon have been a better fit at the trade deadline? Or having both of them on the team, could you have made some personnel moves? So that's where you have to look at the whole body of work. That's where I sit at and say, all right, let's just see. I'm not sitting here banging on James Jones. It's just, this is where you get judged for your roster makeup. People want to give DeAndre Ayton huge dollars because he had a great regular season. And the regular season doesn't mean jack if the Suns don't get out of the first round of the playoffs because Valanciunas pushed him around. That's just a fact. I thought the Jay Wright story was really interesting. So Jay Wright's the head basketball coach at Villanova, was until yesterday, when out of the blue, after going to the Final Four, he decides, you know, I think I'm too well to attend. Jay Wright is handsome as day goes long. Man, oh man, if I look like Jay Wright. Whew, good looking man there. 60 years of age, 21 years at Villanova, likely moving over to the television booth. Makes total sense. Why should I put up with transfer portal and NIL and roster, putting a roster together? Look in the last couple of years. Roy Williams punched out. Mike Krzyzewski punched out. Jay Wright punched out. Enough. You know, the idea of developing, staying loyal, working together as a group, good luck with that. And so Villanova, premier job, and they immediately filled it. Not a surprise. And the Cardinals going through their offseason workouts. Like yesterday, there was a bunch of stuff about Kyler Murray to the Jets for Zach Wilson and picks. It was put out by one, I think it was over on ESPN, and then it got picked up and aggregated by all these other sites. And I know there's not much buzz, if any buzz, around this NFL draft this year. There isn't, because there's not a quarterback or two or three or four that you're going to sit there and say, oh, wow, we got to get him, we got to get him. Like the Cardinals, if they take another defensive player, that'd be 3 years in a row. I'd be shocked by that. So the buildup to the draft, there's going to get stuff that's, there'll be stuff floated in this next 5-6 days that will make no sense at all, but it'll be fun for guys like us. And it'll be fun for some of you that just like to deal in fantasy land and saying, well, what if? There'll be a lot of what if stuff. 5 what if trades that the Cardinals might make. That headline's coming. Not here, thank God, but it's going to come in some places. I thought the best story yesterday, I'll take a break after this, was Jesse Mueller. If you don't know the name Jesse Mueller, you should. Jesse Mueller is over at Grand Canyon University. He's part of their golf program. He played yesterday and qualified for this year's 2022 PGA Championship. What a great story. And he won by 5 strokes, one going away. And he's a former ASU guy too, so good story on that front. All right, on this Thursday, back with more after this timeout. All right, draft now, just a couple of weeks away. Mark Ross, want to bring in a respected voice who's been in the front office, been in the scouting world. He's with NFL Network at NFL Total Access, NFL Now. He joins us for a few minutes as we get closer and closer to the draft. Thanks for jumping on board. First of all, what is your role going to be on draft weekend with NFL Network, Mark?
So I'll be in the studio. Actually, I won't be at the actual draft. You know, they need some people to be at the studio. So I'll be there doing the day shows, Total Access, just on all day long, just when they jump to the studio to get input and feedback through draft night.
What is it like for you in this role on television versus in the front office leading up to the draft in terms of cramming and players taken and having this or that? Just take me through the process of your preparation for the draft.
Yeah, so I watch players just like I used to watch, but just not really, you know, it's life or death when you're with the team and you're watching players and you're always worried about how that certain player fits in with your team, and you're digging deep into having your scouts with all the background and meeting and talking about it. Here, I'm just kind of in a bubble doing it on my own. I'll bounce stuff off of guys I work with at the network, the Daniel Jeremiah's and Bucky Brooks and Lance Zierlein's of the world, and talk to some people throughout the league, but just it's a lot less pressure and a lot less of life or death is what's going on with, you know, every draft pick and every evaluation is key and critical. Now it's more of a free flowing, just talking about more of a big picture and how guys fit in, and kind of more promoting the positivity of their skill sets, because we're really trying to sell the guys when they're on TV. You know, that being said, I still give my critical analysis about player strengths and weaknesses and how I really feel about their talent.
Sure, sure. I mean, you can't go on the air and say, what are they thinking here?
Yeah, I've done that.
So I suppose you can, but you just can't do it that often. Or every player is like, that guy can't play dead. He won't be here in 3 years.
You try to massage it in the media way, not just come outright saying those people don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Mark Ross with us for a few minutes on the NFL Network. Appreciate his time and his insights here. As we sit here today, a few weeks out, top of the draft, pretty well settled in your mind, first 3-4 picks?
No, I think just even now, I was on air, I just got off air today, and just talking about the first pick in the draft, and there's a big push now for Trayvon Walker. Rumors of that being there, you know, all this whole time, we're thinking it's Aiden Hutchinson or Ike Ekwonu, and now Trayvon Walker's in it, and that's the draft, the beauty of the draft. Back when I first started, back in 97, I mean, there was one mock draft the day before, it was USA Today or somebody, and now there's thousands and thousands of them, and they change every day. And once you get the draft day, they're never right. So I always expect the unexpected on draft day. You have a good feel for some of the players that'll get taken in certain spots, but even still, there's always there's surprises, and you can never 100% predict what goes on for the draft. And I think this year it's even more intriguing, just because there aren't those quarterbacks that are up there in years past that you knew quarterbacks were going to go and kind of set the draft and set the value of the draft. Now you've got those wild cards of, okay, these quarterbacks who we're talking about, the Malik Willises and Kenny Picketts, are they worthy of that? And how high will these teams jump to go get these guys? So I think that adds even more intrigue to the draft. People say it's a weak draft because there's not the star power there, but I think it adds more intrigue to see who's going to go jump on these guys.
Well, and it's a great point, because I think we both can agree that Carolina needs a quarterback. Seattle needs a quarterback. You can make the argument Detroit needs a quarterback. So some of that stuff is in place, and just say, okay, are those guys going to sit tight and hope someone falls to them? Or where you're sitting there on draft night and all of a sudden we have fireworks, because maybe there is that team behind the scenes that is, no one's talking about us, but we kind of think we're New Orleans, or we're Atlanta, or the teams that people may not be focusing on that may try to jump ahead.
Yeah, and that's the beauty, that's the intrigue of it, where you mentioned those usual suspects there that we know desperately need a quarterback, but will it be a Kansas City of years ago with had an Alex Smith? Kansas City's they're not going to take a quarterback. Bam, there's a trade. Kansas City's in there. Bam, Patrick Mahomes. So, and there's always that. You can never predict that. And so, will there be a team like that, like Kansas City did a few years ago, to who are really intrigued by one of these quarterbacks that could go in the first round? Will those teams that are up there we're thinking needs a quarterback, do they feel highly enough about those quarterbacks to take them there? Will they sit back and wait and try to go another route or later on in the draft? So I think there's plenty of intrigue where, because of the nature of these quarterbacks, the talent, the lack of kind of experience with some of them, or the lack of belief in a lot of them, it's going to add to a lot of drama on draft night.
Draft night, of course, and throughout the weekend and leading up to it, you can see Mark and his cast of friends and characters and personalities on the NFL Network, on NFL Access, NFL Now, from Vegas, of course. I have a lot of ways to go about it. Check out their content. I want to stick with a quarterback spot for just a second. Put your personnel hat on again and look at Brock Purdy. Here's a guy, Mark, that was here in high school at Perry High School, went to Iowa State, been knocked around a little bit in terms of the draft. Does he have enough arm strength? I look at it and say, I don't know. He handed the ball off to Breece Hall. Charlie Kohler is a hell of a tight end. Maybe they just didn't air it out that often. Maybe this guy is being overlooked a little bit. What's your read on Brock Purdy?
I like Brock, and I have a friend of mine who's actually back at Arizona State there doing some recruiting for them, Dave Buller, who kind of was knew him for a while. And when he was at Syracuse, I think, tried to get him out there. So I've known about this young man for a little bit here. And when you watch him play, he's got the elements you look for that I think are comparable with some of those other guys, where he's got a lot of moxie. The guy knows how to play football, and he's got confidence, and he's got vision, and he's got some playmaking ability about him. So does he lack size? Yes. Does he lack a gigantic arm? Yes. But he has that feel and that moxie that you look for in quarterbacks that, okay, this transitions really well. And those are the elements that I kind of look for. And as you mentioned, Breece Hall and Kohler, like those are really good players. Will be good draft picks as well. But I think if Brock Purdy gets in the right spot, he'll have a pretty decent career, has a chance to make it and contribute to a team.
I've had some people say he's a little bit like Colt McCoy in that he's going to hold a clipboard, he's going to get on the field, and he's going to get 10 years, 12 years in this league because he's just going to show up and do his thing, right?
Exactly, and not be scared. And that's the thing when it gets in a game to not those guys. If you're a backup and you get in a game, you got to make something happen. You just can't get in there. And he has that element to his the way he plays the game.
Not a bad way to make a living, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, before I get you out of here, what do you make out of what's gone on here in Arizona in the offseason? You have Kyler and his agent, you have Chandler Jones leaving, you have Chase Edmonds leaving, you have Christian Kirk leaving, and yet Steve Keim gets an extension, Kliff gets an extension. Is it what's really going on here, or they're going to be okay? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd love to have that stability that they had on Arizona. They've got going on out there, man. Jeez. We had two Super Bowls and got fired out of New York, so these guys are rolling, keep getting extensions, and so I would have loved to have that. So, yeah, it has been. Like, you just look at it a year ago, this time, like, wow, we've got really got some foundational pieces, and we really have a lot of talent on this team. And then a year later, I mean, just those names that you mentioned, I mean, those are – how do you replace Chandler Jones? And even Chase Edmonds, what he did for that offense. And Kirk, is now you got to replace him as well. So, you know, when you're looking at the landscape of it, the Kyler Murray, when that went down, like, how do you get – contentious with your franchise quarterback like this. So, you know, you go out and win some games and all that is forgotten, but if they go out and start losing or struggling a little bit, those things get magnified a lot more. And you're sitting there as the owner thinking, wow, did we do the right thing with this team? So I think this is a very, very critical year for Arizona, and especially the landscape of, you know, the Rams they're right there, San Fran's right there. And how will they handle having a somewhat decent year last year, but then also falling flat at the end again? So this is a critical year for everyone there.
Okay. One other question on that. And that is this, Mark, you've been in front offices as you talk about your time with the Giants. When you have an agent trying to work you over and he does it through the media, and I'm sitting here, I've been in this market since 93. And I know this, that Michael Bidwell or Bill Bidwell did not like to be told what to do by anybody. And they're just going to stick their feet in the ground and saying, we're not budging. So I think in the next couple of weeks, not even this coming season, if you don't get a sign from Kyler Murray, do you just show up and hope he's there? I mean, you've got to have something in place. And to your point, if they don't win, is he a guy that wants to be around a situation where there's not winning?
Yeah, and I would say no. And it's very delicate with what's going on there. And that's the agent's job. You know, you can't, and whenever you have negotiations with players and the agent, you have to keep the business on one side, and the person, you can't let it get personal, and because they're trying to do their job and you're trying to do your job as a front office. Okay, what do we do best for the team and the player, but namely for the sake of the team? And the agent is all about what do I do best for my player? How can I do this? But, and there's a lot of contentiousness that goes on, but you can't let it get personal. So when that did get personal for a little bit there, it seemed at first it was very surprising. So, again, just like the season is very delicate, I think these negotiations with what's ever going on behind the scenes with Kyler, they better treat that with the right way and respectfully, and think about, okay, if this is our guy, we got to make sure that we do everything right by him, but also the organization.
That's great stuff. You know, really good insight. I appreciate your time and good to chop it up with you. Thank you.
Sure thing. Okay.
There's Mark Ross with us with the NFL Network, NFL Total Access, NFL Now. They have the NFL Draft Inside Now, and of course, year round two. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, let's turn our attention to the NFL Draft. And as we've been doing a lot about the local kids, focusing in on Brock Purdy and some other quarterbacks for a few minutes, but Chrissy Freud with the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge. It's our first time having Chrissy on board the show. She did a deep dive on Brock. We've seen Brock since his days at Perry High School on Iowa State, and the community very excited. Wanted to have Chrissy on board talking about the story she did and just her observations of Brock and other quarterbacks. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
It's a great Monday, Chrissy. Tell me about your background. How did you get to this spot?
Yeah, so I started doing a lot of stuff at USA Today pretty much right out of high school and then covered the Tennessee Titans. And then the thing about the Titans, though, was there was always like this camp battle for a backup quarterback to beat out Logan Woodside, and they bring in a new guy every year and it wouldn't happen. And then after Marcus Mariota kind of hit a bit of a downfall in Tennessee, there was also talk of them replacing him, which ultimately ended up being Ryan Tannehill. But so anyway, this was a team that was always in the quarterback conversation one way or another. And so I developed this quarterback series and started interviewing quarterbacks, evaluating quarterbacks around college, and eventually kind of just developed something for that and then got hired on elsewhere to go and cover quarterbacks. So that's kind of the background on that. And I've been specializing in it for, I'd say, the past 3 or 4 years.
That is awesome. That's great. Chrissy Freud, the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge. Tell me about Brock Purdy, your interview with him. Let's just start there. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, I think that Brock is someone who's underrated. I think that part of that has to do with the questionable decision making that he did on the field at Iowa State at times. But he did hit some high points. Like I wrote in the story, I think that he has probably the best or some of the best lower body mechanics in this draft, which is a huge deal because any quarterback trainer will tell you that quarterbacking starts from the ground up. There's a lot of talk about arm angles and what type of release someone has, but really, if the lower body mechanics are not there in the right way, then the quarterback's gonna have a really hard time being accurate, and that's something he's been praised for quite a bit. And then the thing that's been the major knock on him that I've kind of done a lot more research on over the past season is this notion that he can't throw the deep ball, and that comes from the fact that the Iowa State offense, you have someone like Breece Hall, who is a star running back, first or second rounder. So the offensive scheme is going to be tailored to him. And in a scheme like that, you don't need a quarterback to throw a lot of deep passes. And so if this happens every year with at least one player, there's a narrative that just because he was not asked to do it at the college level, that he can't do it at the NFL level. But Brock had a 68-yard pass against Oklahoma State. I mean, that's number 8 team in the country. And then he's shown that on film, he showed it at pro day, showed at the combine that he can throw the deep ball. And so I think on just with that, that's been kind of the major knock on him. And then if you can kind of see past that, I think you see someone who could be a 6th or 7th rounder and should be somebody that team takes a player that a team should take a chance on.
You know, to follow up on your point, Iowa State also threw to their tight ends a bunch. And mm-hmm. and their tight ends, they had a couple of them that were very, very talented. And so I think to your point of the deep ball wasn't really there as Breece Hall was running the ball, as finding those tight ends. And maybe it was just him not being asked to do that, right?
Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway from it. And then it's the same thing, which I thought that he had a decent number of passing attempts in most games. But then the other side of that, too, is there sometimes are some quarterbacks that they'll – only be asked to throw the ball about 20 times a game. And then the narrative also develops for them that they're not a good passer, that they're not an adequate passer. So I think if we had put Brock Purdy in a different offensive scheme, maybe where they did have a lot more deep passes, that this narrative wouldn't necessarily be there. And maybe he'd be talked about a little bit more than he currently is being talked about.
I myself think the intangibles are being overlooked with him. And again, I've seen him since high school, so my lens is different. Gotten to know the family quite well. My lens is just different than an NFL GM. Do you see intangibles with him?
Yeah, I think he has strong leadership ability, a lot of resiliency. And I think that he's a quarterback who's also really gotten a lot of flack over the course of his career. And I think that he's bounced back from that well. And I think that he's brought, like I said, just a strong level of leadership to this team. It has brought Iowa State to new heights. And it's, like I said earlier, he just doesn't really get enough credit for doing so.
Chrissy Freud, the Draft Network, NBC Sports Edge with us for a couple of minutes talking quarterbacks. Big picture, your view of the quarterback room in this year's draft. Most people I have on the show say it's not a good year. It's not a, you know, there's nobody that stands out, so on and so forth. Do you see it exactly the same way, or just got to work a little bit harder at it, guys, to see that there's some people here?
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it that way. I think that this is a class that has a lot of high-end backup potential that people aren't seeing. So I see very few quarterbacks in this class that have a strong it factor. I think that's part of it. But I see a lot of guys that have a good foundation and something to really build upon. And then I think that with a strong foundation like that, there's going to be at least one guy that really hits and pops that no one really expected. Because, I mean, Carson Strong to me is the best pure passer in this class. I think that if he, you kind of saw with Mac Jones, like we have this stereotype that, oh, he's a pocket passer, he can't do well. But if they go to the right place, I'd say Mac Jones is performing currently better than anyone in that class did. And then Desmond Ridder is someone who's been projected everywhere, probably has the best set of foundational traits to build on in this draft. And then the Cincinnati offense didn't really ask him to use his athleticism a lot, but we've kind of realized that's something that he does have. And if he goes in a more, I guess, freewheeling offense, maybe we see him more as an athlete. And so I think that between guys like that, that there's a lot of potential here. And then Kenny Pickett, obviously, I'd say he's at least above average in quite literally every aspect of quarterbacking. So he will at least be a high-end backup.
Go back to our conversation about Brock. Is he one of those guys that you believe is being overlooked coming into this draft?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has to do with that narrative that's been built around him surrounding the deep ball. And that's kind of what he told me, is it's going to come down to a team giving him a shot in camp and asking him to do it, and him just showing that to somebody in person.
Good stuff. I appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
It's Chrissy Freud, the Draft Network, and NBC Sports Edge. And we're back with more after this timeout.